It's that time of the week again, folks. This is me, your host, Richard McCall, here in Bogota, Colombia, 2,600 meters close to the stars. And this is episode 515 of the Colombia Calling podcast. It appears that the rains have returned to Bogota and much of Colombia. Yes, the reservoirs are very low. Hydropower, which makes up 68% of the country's energy network. Well, that's still under some threat because we've got a long way to go until the reservoirs can be filled again. But it feels comfortable to once again have wet feet and socks after having stepped on the losas escupidoras, or the spitting flagstones that aren't properly put in place on the pavements in Bogota. So you step on an edge and the other edge shoots straight up your trouser leg. So there we go. We're back in Bogota with these issues again. But it's raining. A huge, well, I would say huge, not biblical, but very large march took place across the country this weekend on Sunday. It was the opposition plus people, I would say, not conforming to what Petro is trying to do with, well, they were marching against the reforms, pension, health, and everything else, and of course his constituyente, the desire to change a part of the constitution. So people are out en masse. It's anywhere between 250 to 350,000 people, depending on who you listen to. And yeah, it was a big one, not biblical, but significant. Will Petro now, will he come out of his echo chamber and listen and perhaps act? I suppose, why should he? Because in the great tradition of Colombian presidents and premiers, they don't. But just remember that Iván Duque didn't listen to the protesters in 2019 and 2021. Juan Manuel Santos didn't listen, didn't believe that the El Paro Agrario didn't exist, so the agrarian strikes did not exist. And prior to that, of course, we go back, Uribe, Pastrana, and beyond. You know, it seems to be the practice here. But anyway, we're in the Petro government, and we'll see how he responds. Of course, keep an eye out for May the 1st, because while there will always be a march on May the 1st for International Workers' Day, this one seems to be, it will be taken over by the pro-government marchers. And so let's see what happens there. This week's episode is a hard one. I'm sorry. We don't normally do reactionary episodes, but this one feels necessary. Only today, another U.S. citizen was found dead in Medellin. 2 weeks he's been dead in his apartment in Los Naranjos. Well, we don't know why, but that takes it up to something like 17 or 14 foreigners this year already have lost their lives in Medellin. But we are actually talking not about that side of things in Medellin, but the exploitation of minors in Medellin and in Colombia in general, with Tyler Schwab, the director of Libertas International NGO, which deals with and has set up a foundation to care for survivors and victims of, let's say, sexual trafficking of minors and rape of minors. And this has been going on. There has been a Chinese gentleman caught last week. Then a couple of weeks ago, there's a man from Ohio who was able to skip country after being found. His name is Mr. Livingston from Ohio, skipped the country after being found with two girls, 12 and 13 years old, in a hotel. And on it goes. And it's not going to stop until actually something truly happens on the ground and justice is meted out. So we are talking about that with Tyler this week. Again, it's a tough one. No news here on the podcast, only for subscribers. Subscribers can sign up at www.patreon.com/Colombia Calling. So there you can get your news there if you are a subscriber on Patreon. Emily will be back next week with the news briefing, the Colombia briefing. I'll be back with more great interviews, but for now, we'll go over to Tyler Schwab, who's in Wyoming, and we'll talk to him about his Libertas International Foundation, what they're doing, and what the situation really is. How do these hotels that host these people, how do they manage to do this? I mean, how do people not know? What is the Justice Department doing? So over to some messages from our sponsors, and then on to our interview with Tyler. Thank you for listening. Don't go away.
The Columbia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Columbia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Colombia Calling website, that's www.colombiacalling.co, or the BNB Colombia Tours website, that's www.bnbcolombia.com, and they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolombia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors. This is the Columbia Calling podcast, episode 515. Our very special guest was on in September 2023, episode 487. It's none other than Tyler Schwab from Libertas International, very important foundation who help. It's a foundation that helps with the victims, minors who have been sexually exploited, and he has been the busiest man, perhaps, the busiest man in this subject in the last few weeks. I think he's done more than probably 50 interviews, resulting from the raid on the Gotham Hotel and the issues surrounding an American man called Timothy Allen Livingston. So, welcome back, Tyler. We're going to be talking all about, I guess it's the sexual exploitation, the violation of the rights, essentially it's rape, of minors in Colombia and I guess elsewhere. So Tyler, welcome back. Not a nice topic, but one in which you work.
Yeah, no, I'm happy to be back, Richard, on your podcast. Out of all the interviews that I've done over the last couple of weeks, this one is by far the one I'm the most looking forward to because it's with a familiar face, it's with my favorite podcast, And it's such a good setting. Last time I was on, you know, I had the chance to spread the word about Libertas International to a community that I'm not really tied in with on the good side, with the good expats living in Colombia. And so because of that podcast, we got a lot of support, some encouragement, some new followers, some new donors from people that have listened to the Columbia Calling podcast. And so I'm happy to be back on and talk about the work that we're doing because it's been, since I was last on in September, there's been four Americans who have been arrested for crimes against children in Medellin specifically. And there's a, like you mentioned, there's an international manhunt for Timothy Allen Livingston who managed to escape the system.
Let's start with that. Let's start with this issue. This happened, I guess, you know, it's a few weeks ago now. Timothy Allen Livingston of Ohio, I believe. I have been trying to reach out to newspapers there. I think you probably have. I know of other people who've been like tagging newspapers, as yet nothing. He was found and reported. I mean, if we put it into context, it's a hotel in El Poblado. So the kind of an exclusive area of Bogota, of Medellin, Hotel Gotham, which I find is a incredibly tasteless name, suggesting sinister activity. But I guess we can go into that. The owner is Canadian. They have since, it was going to be shut for, I don't know, 15 days or 6 days or something. Legally, you know, it was going to be shut, but the owner has decided to shut it down because you don't come back from this scandal as a hotelier, you know, who's someone who has fortunately never been involved in this, never plans to be involved in this, and runs things very, very straight down the line. We have very stringent rules, as everyone should. Anyway, the owner has shut down the hotel. Timothy Annan Livingston tries to get into the hotel one evening, and there's a doorman who basically says no. He's with two young girls, aged 12 and 13, but he comes back at a later hour. I'm getting this right. He comes back at a later hour, and there's like a key card to get in, and the doorman isn't there. And so he's able to get up. And so I was just listening to the podcast by Maria Jimena Dusan, which is always excellent. And she says, why when neighbors complained and called in that there's some suspicious goings on, did it almost take 2 days for, like, say, the police to turn up? I think this is in a different situation, but Timothy Allen Livingston, the police arrived, they found paraphernalia everywhere in the room, used condoms, drugs, and so on. Because he wasn't caught in flagrante, he was held for 12 hours, so therefore not guilty, and released, and he was able to flee the country. There are just too many things here that don't square up for me on this. Tyler, can you give us some, what really went on?
That's a good question. I think we're all trying to figure that out. Even before this call, I was talking with one of my police contacts of just like, hey, just so I have this clear, like, why was he not arrested? Like, why? I mean, if it barks like a dog, if it yelps like a dog, if it smells like a dog, like, what exactly is this animal? You go into this hotel and you find condoms, you find two very young kids, 12, 13 years old, with this American man. I mean, can't you, like, is there like a level where you can assume what is going on? And it seems like there's a lot of confusion with different police agencies as well as to what actually happened and what's going on now. What I had learned from the cop that I usually call when one of our girls reports an American is that essentially because he wasn't caught with essentially raping these kids, that he was able to go free, which unfortunately it tracks usually with the way that we usually work. Because like with our foundation, it's almost like this whole case is kind of put in reverse of how we usually work, where our team is very used to getting a call from Bienestar Social about a little girl who's been abused by an American person, and then us communicating with embassies, with police, supporting the survivor, and essentially walking with them to get justice. And once the guy's in handcuffs, we blow up the case.
Yeah.
But because for that to happen, there has to be a number of denuncias essentially against this person. And because there wasn't a denuncia specifically against this person, they said that they had to let him go, which I don't 100% agree with. I think it's very flawed. And I think you should be able to assume of like there's condoms, there's used condoms, there's a hot tub, there's two kids, there's a man. Like, what do you think? There's drugs. Sounds like some of the kids also had drugs in their system as well. That you're safe to assume what was eventually going to happen. But it sounds like in this case, they weren't able to. And because of that, Timothy, he's slippery. It seems like he's slippery. He looks like he slipped in with this hotel in the lapse of security. It looks like he slipped out of Colombia because of a small loophole that a few of the laws in Colombia have.
Yeah, and why didn't the authorities name him? I guess there's a presumption of innocent until proven guilty, but why didn't they name him straight away? And why didn't they name the hotel straight away?
That's a good question. That I don't know. I do not know why they wouldn't do that. I think it was actually the alcalde de Medellin who actually named the guy personally. Yeah. I wish I could give you a better answer of why they didn't. Yeah. I know that even with the arrest that happened a few weeks ago with Richard Opolimski, codenamed the chemist, they didn't release his name either at first, even after he was arrested. It actually had to come through another source where they actually found out his name. I'm not sure why they don't name people right off the bat.
Why is that guy called the chemist?
He was called the chemist because he would make his own Tusi in his apartment. And he would, when the victims would show up to his apartment, when they got there, was they were under obligation to consume the drugs that he was producing in his apartment. And then he would drug them and then abuse them. And that's why they called him. The girls referred to him also as the chemist because he would produce his own drugs. Mm. And you bring up an interesting, like, I want to touch on this because you mentioned the neighbors calling in and with the hotel and why it took so long. In Colombia, in my experience, like working with law enforcement, it's less of like the agency that you call and the versus like the person that you call. Like I have, you know, my agency of the Colombian National Police that I call when things go bad, but I have a specific person that I always count on that I know is going to answer. I know that he's going to act accordingly. And I mentioned this story because with the chemist specifically that we're touching on, the chemist, Richard Opolimski, when he was finally arrested and we were essentially escorting him out of his Airbnb that he had rented, the neighbors that lived below him at 2 a.m. started almost like a standing ovation, started clapping and cheering and celebrating his arrest. And so one of our guys was like, well, why are you guys clapping? Like, did you guys know this guy was a pedophile? And they essentially told us, yeah, we knew. We told the owner of the Airbnb, who did nothing because his check cleared. And we also called the police numerous times that there was young girls going in, there was parties, there's smell of marijuana, there's smell of drugs, and nothing happened. So the fact that something finally happened, even at 2 a.m, caused us to applaud. And so it's with this case of like these neighbors in this hotel, it's unfortunate it took 2 days to get this to happen. Mm-hmm. And I've had that experience as well. And so for me, I just latch onto a contact that I know I can trust and will answer the phone. And that's who I call every single time.
I think that's very, you know, I think you've got it there. It's not the agency you call, but the person. Who is the person most likely to respond? And I assume it's also there is a lack of actual sort of officers working on this. It's like sort of on, what are they? Are they called the sort of Rights for Childhood or Childhood Protection Agents? I mean, I can't remember what they're called, but you would know.
Yeah, the agency is called DIRPO, D-I-R-P-O, and it's like Policía de Infancia. And yeah, they are, I mean, working with them so closely, they are severely underfunded. They have not a lot of staff. And the really good ones in that office, they're still underfunded, but they're very well trained and very trauma sensitive. But as we've seen, like in the news just over the last, like, let's just focus on Medellin, just all the news that's come out in the recent weeks about not only like Timothy Allen Livingston, but I mean, 2 days later, there was a Australian Colombian that was arrested. And then this morning I got hit up by somebody that said they had arrested a Chinese man for having a 14-year-old in his Airbnb this morning and or late last night or sometime in the last 12 hours. And so with the situation, the way the city is, the way the country is, you're spot on that those police are severely underfunded and very much undermanned from the cases that are happening.
And there wasn't any case of the police or Timothy Allen Livingston being able to clean up his mess before leaving. I mean, I sometimes worry about this, the side, because a city like Medellin obviously wants to combat this. Every city wants to combat this. But at the same time, yeah, it's embarrassing. And so I worry that sometimes they try and clean it up and no, this doesn't happen. Get out of the country.
Yeah, I mean, that could have happened. I don't think that was the case in this case, but we've had cases where some of the details don't end up in the news.
Yeah.
Because obviously Medellin is trying to, Medellin is such a fascinating city. Like I love the city so much. It has such a good place in my heart. And I think it represents so much of like what the Colombian people are about, of how they've risen up from the darkness of the 80s and 90s to have this city the way it is, but it's almost gone, you know, too far in the other direction where it's now attracting, you know, not so much these narcos, although the narcos still have a good presence there, but these just the worst that the United States has to offer. People that are racist, that are homophobic, that are sexist, that are just awful, that go there and commit these crimes they're contributing to, I think, the news article that came out last year where they called Medellin the biggest brothel in the world, the biggest open-air brothel in the world. And it's bringing in a lot of just the worst foreigners, not just Americans, but there's other foreigners as well. And I think Medellin really is trying to clean up their act and clean up their clean up the city, clean up, not so much their act, but clean up the act of the people that it's receiving year after year with these tourism dollars. And so, I mean, it's with this case, I don't think that they cleaned it up and then told him to get out. I really think that he took advantage of a loophole in the law where they, I think the police just walked in and like, even like saying, verbalizing that if they would have walked in with those girls being abused, like that's an additional trauma on those girls. It's like, thank God they walked in when they did. But because they walked in when they did, he ended up fleeing the country. So it's a really hard situation.
And now there's a follow-on from this. Of course, the report's out in the last couple of days. You know, I know that President Petro said, you know, we're going to request Interpol and an extradition. But the reality between extraditions from the U.S. to Colombia is very, it's a, like, the likelihood is very, very slim. And so he's out there. What I found, what you said just now, this as you said, the worst of what America, Europe, whomever, China, I guess, as you said, has had to offer is fascinating because, you know, something like an article like saying the biggest open air brothel in the world, Medellin, it attracts that type of person. Then, you know, that goes out there as almost like publicity. And I was there in late September. So after we'd done the interview, and I accompany a group of lawyers, and you know they're all in their 70s, and we had a meeting with the sort of specialist doctor who has found all of the sort of the gene that can protect people against Alzheimer's, you know, showing the really amazing things and research and investigation coming out of Medellin. Of course, we had to take them to Comuna 13. So Comuna 13, you know, it's the urban renovation talk and so on. And we take them out. And this is where I started seeing, and, you know, obviously there's all the T-shirts for Pablo Escobar, hats and so on. And I asked a guy, one of the vendors, who buys these? And they said to me, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, and Cubans. They love these. And so I'm like, ugh. This, which reminds me of a moment when I was flying back from Cartagena to Bogota not so long ago, and there was a Mexican lady with the Pablo Escobar hat on, and I said to her, "Would you like me to wear my Chapo hat?" And she got angry. But you know, anyway, this is neither here nor there. But I'm sort of talking about this penetration, the gangster thug type person, the passport bro, these people who come down, and I did notice a bunch of Americans of that kind of awful background, the worst. They weren't with minors, they weren't with underage girls, but they had clearly, let's say, hired women to be with them for the week. It was clear. And this, to me, I mean, I've been here a long time, I've traveled a lot, you can see these things. I mean, I'm not falsely accusing. You can see the girls don't speak, or women don't speak English, the men rarely speak very much Spanish. You could see it was an accompaniment. And I wonder then if it's like a package put together. And are these, you know, and in terms of, I'm certain that people have WhatsApp groups or have Facebook groups or have, you know, whatever, Telegram, whatever, of how to organize this, how to organize a trip to Medellin in which your Airbnb is tolerant, in which you know where to go, in which the girls are available. And then on the very sinister side, package tourism for you know, sexual tourism and abuse of minors. Would you say that this is in existence now here?
Yeah, I think definitely. I think everything you just said, I think, is why you're seeing Medellin react the way it is to Timothy Allen, because they put up with so much for so long. Like even like the passport bros, for example, that come in there, that are loud, that have their cameras out all the time, they're always looking to film their content, that are always partying. You have the people that are there for drugs, that are high in the streets, like wandering around like zombies in the streets. There's a really interesting podcast I just listened to the other day. I forget what it's called, but it was a Colombian guy just talking about tourism in Medellin, specifically of the passport bros, for example. You mentioned the passport bros, the content creators, the drug addicts, the people there for sexual sex tourism. That even like when there was a situation that I saw when I was in Medellin last, I was staying in a hotel in El Poblado, and there was an Airbnb next door, and there was a group of maybe 7 or 8 American tourists that had rented the Airbnb that were having parties on the roof, very loud, very obnoxious, very drunk. And so around 3 in the morning, people that were staying in my Colombian hotel went out on their balconies and started to throw their trash at this party, telling them to shut up. Like, it's 3 a.m., be quiet, and you don't get to do whatever you want just because you're here on holiday. Mm. And then you get to, even to the most sinister, where, like, these guys, like, some of the stuff that, like, we read in the news, like James Schulte, the MMA fighter, Dominic, was arrested a few weeks ago. Like, yeah, they're pedophiles that have come to Medellin to abuse kids. But even, like, deeper in those details where Dominic saying, you know, to a journalist, I don't know what sexual exploitation is. These girls need food. I'm helping them out. You're a xenophobe. You should respect me. I'm a man. Look around you. Everything you've built has been built by men. You should respect me. Or people like the MMA fighter who would choke his victims and tell him that you're going to be my sex slave because I have these videos and you're going to do whatever I want, or sending these catalogs of his victims to other men. Like, they're just off on all levels of society. And I think that Medellin is just tired of it, because there's people like that have also told, like, to get back to your original point, especially like in the news that's come out recently, there's been a lot of people that have reached out to the foundation, to us, to the cops, talking about Americans, Europeans, Indians, Israelis, who are doing exactly what you mentioned, giving details on the Airbnbs that look the other way as long as the check clears, that have the Telegram groups, that have the WhatsApp groups, that tell you the groups on Facebook, like Medellin After Dark or something.
There's a group called that? Oh.
Yeah, I actually learned about it a few weeks ago. I've known about the some of the groups, you know, the Facebook groups like Medellin Expats or Expats in Colombia, or, you know, a lot of these places where a lot of these people hide out. But I guess there's even other groups that are even more dark than those.
Yeah.
And so, like, you talked about, you know, this news article, Timothy Allen Livingston, how it's shining a light on so many different things. I think one of the things that you've mentioned that I think is shining a light on and giving the power to report is some of these people organizing these trips out to Guatapé, these sex packets, these groups of tourists that come in, these men groups. And I think it's all for the good, and I hope that the Colombian police will count on groups like Libertas and other groups to go after these people, because that is a crime. It's proxenetismo, pimping. Yeah. Which is a crime in Colombia, whether the victim is under 18 or over 18.
Yeah, that's the issue. Prostitution is legal in Colombia, but it's illegal if organized, like, so proxeneta. Of course, underage is illegal, which, again, you know, we spend some time downtown. We go to the Botero Museum and, you know, that Parque Berrio and everything. It's just, it isn't worth talking about. But I was thinking about the way the Airbnb owners can look the other way. And, you know, we come back, and I know that there's a good magazine, a good investigative journalist magazine here called Vorágine, and they have done good articles. I think, I'm sure you're quoted in them because you're quoted in everything. And they go into the gentrification argument. And the issue, I mean, gentrification is taking place everywhere. But when you have someone like the owner or the association that owns the Hotel Gotham and the 200 or 300 different apartments and condos that Canadian's company manages, it's impossible for them to know what's going on in every single one of them. And then, you know, the people of Medellin are talking about gentrification. But what I'm concerned about as well is, could this owner have known? He was the owner of the Hotel Gotham. Do you think he had any idea of what was going on? These are allegations, of course, but you have to be very careful. But do you think he knew what was going on in his hotel? I know exactly what goes on my hotel, and I'm not there a lot of the time. You know, I know.
Yeah. You know, I really hope that he didn't. I really hope that he didn't know what was going on. And I really hope that, you know, just like their communication said, that it was him taking advantage. I don't love, I love Batman, but I don't love the name Gotham, because I think, especially with a hotel in a place like Medellin. And I know I come at this from a weird spot too, because, you know, in our foundation, you know, we support 102 survivors of trafficking. 88 of those as of yesterday are from the city of Medellin. And like, these girls have horror stories of what's happened in Airbnbs, what's happened in hotels, what's happened in their own home, what's happened on camera. And so I just, Hotel Gotham, I just, the name just brings up so many different things where, like, it's the message is sinister. The message is, it's, you know, what is Gotham? Like, I just finished watching the Dark Knight series a couple of days ago because I love Batman. Yeah. Gotham is dark. Like, Gotham is corrupt. Gotham is, it's run by the mob, like all these different things. Mm-hmm. Like, it has these connotations about that name. And so the name, it's just, it's not, a, it's in the end, it's not a good name. You know, if he really was, if the hotel really was just taken advantage of by Timothy Allen Livingston, like I do feel for them a little bit where they are getting just, I mean, in the news and with the activists, like they're getting roasted essentially for being the place where Timothy was found. And, you know, I'm glad to hear that they're collaborating with law enforcement. I hope they continue to do so. I will say that when the Hotel Gotham, when that name came up with our survivors, we started to ask them, hey, do you have any association with this place? Were you ever taken there? And all of them said no, which was good for at least for me, just knowing that they had never been abused in this place. That being said, most of the girls that we have in our foundation were abused in Airbnbs, not so much hotels. And I imagine with that many properties, it is hard to know what's going on. But, you know, going into this business, you kind of have that responsibility to know what's going on in your properties. And if illegal stuff is going on there, who you're renting to. I mean, I think the times have passed of like, well, as long as the check clears, like, I don't know what they're doing. As long as, as the money gets in there, that time is gone, especially now, like in Colombia specifically, because so many survivors in Colombia, not just in Medellin and not just in Libertas, have been abused in hotels that turn a blind eye, or Airbnbs. You got into this business, you knew the risks. This is one of the risks I listened to your podcast just recently with the guy that owned that hotel. And it was such a fascinating podcast of the stuff that can go on, but it's like a hotel owner. You kind of have to, like, that's part of the job is making sure that kind of stuff doesn't happen on your establishments. And so I guess that's a long answer to your question, but that's my opinion.
Right. Yeah, and that was last week's podcast with Gary Murray, and I found it very unsettling because he finds out later that the colonel in the army has been using his hotel for bringing in, I guess, 14-year-old virgins, and I just find that very unsettling. How, first of all, how do you not know? He did make the claims and stuff, but at the same time, this is a person, you know, a Colombian colonel in the army, and he says, you know, you worry for your safety, you worry for the reality of it. It is still Colombia, you know? And so, but again, I'm not justifying this, and last week's episode has been the most commented episode so far in 514 episodes, and you know, people have commented on that, and rightly so. But it was a fascinating conversation. That aside, it was an absolutely fascinating conversation. Now, I have too many questions for you, but you have mentioned this Dominic DiVincenzo from the US, who also was arrested at the same time. You accompanied the police going in. So they went in with like a SWAT team, and you were there. I think, were you filming when you went in as well? And it's horrible, horrible man, because we saw it. You did a little documentary and had it put into English as well. That I did watch both of them, the English and the Spanish. And it's the absolute stereotype of who you would expect. You know, this kind of slovenly character. And then there was it one girl or two girls in there when he was arrested? I don't recall. But what is it like to go on a raid like this? You know, what is it? What I mean, it's just, I find these things so it must be terrifying at the same time what you might find.
Yeah, that's such a good question. Like what those raids are like. No, we don't film when we go on it. They have their own film team, like, that works for the media, so they can do their press release and all that stuff. And on one of the operations, they wanted to, with the chemist, with Richard Opalimski, the Colombian police invited RCN, the news agency that they were doing a documentary on these cases and on us, which was awesome. Like, it was great to, more than anything, just because we're super transparent. Like, people want to know what we're doing and what we're talking about. RCN got to interview some of our girls, and I think that's just the most impacting thing, is seeing where they came from, what they're doing, and where they're going. And and for me, like, going on those raids, it's always you just never know what you're gonna. You're right. You never know what you're gonna find. We've been in the three arrests that I've been on this year. You know, one was in New York City, arresting the American police officer Ahmed Bihari, who had sexually exploited a 19-month-old baby in Medellin. And with that one, it was interesting because it was a suburban neighborhood in upstate Yonkers, New York. Wow. And his parents were home, and his parents were insistent that, hey, you have the wrong house. You have the wrong house. Like, my son is a police officer, totally innocent in all this. And the next room, Officer Bihari is confessing to the whole thing. Mm. And it's just a wall that separates these two situations. With the chemist, it was like you described, it's exactly what you would think of, like, these people that come and abuse these kids. We go into this house. This is the one where the neighbors, you know, start to applaud because they finally got this guy. And he was so drugged out that he had no idea what was happening. When we went in there, he was sleeping on the wall. He was walking as if a zombie. They asked him, like, what certain items were. And he was like, I can't remember. Just totally out of it. It wasn't until 12 hours later where he finally realized, oh, they arrested me for abusing kids. And this guy, he'd been to Colombia like 67 times, and just the abuse that he would inflict in this Airbnb, and just awful. But the last one with Dominic, that one was it was in an upstate, upscale neighborhood. It was a penthouse. He was constructing a new floor in his penthouse illegally. Just had zero conscience of the laws of Colombia. They told me he couldn't build. He built anyway. And then he went in, and there was a 16-year-old girl with him. There was drugs. There was paraphernalia. He was loud. He was arrogant. He was saying that even then, when they found him with a 16-year-old girl in his apartment, saying that he had no proof. And I mean, for him to get arrested, for any of these guys to get arrested, Bihari, the chemist, or DiVincenzo, there's so many things that have to happen with the survivors. There's denunces that has to happen. For an arrest to actually happen, the police have more than enough evidence to make those happen. Mm. And the last one was the one that was, I think, after that happened, because the arrest happened, he was taken to processing and sent before a judge. That case was hard for me because, you know, we get to walk with so many of these survivors through their path of healing. I get to see that when they get good grades, when they get a new job, when they do all these different cool things. Seeing one in the middle of her exploitation was hard. And seeing just like the hopelessness in her face she's 16, she's tiny, she's in this apartment with this awful American man in this penthouse surrounded by police. The life that she must have had that led to this moment broke my heart. And it just recommitted me, like, in the work that we do to protect the Colombian people, to protect these vulnerable girls, to help these police. Because usually when it happens, you just want to sing the Colombian national anthem. You're just so proud that Colombia is fighting back against these people. But in this case, it was just hard to find a girl that young, that small, in this apartment with this just awful human being.
So he was arrested, but is he in jail?
Yeah, he's currently, I think, awaiting trial. Okay. He's in jail. They go before a judge. The judge determines if it's an illegal arrest, and then he gets sent to jail. And the journalism in Colombia has been really spectacular on, like, just what his activities were in Medellin before he was arrested. Because I knew about him obviously because so many of our survivors had mentioned him as someone who had abused them, so I knew that part of it, and I knew that he had lived there since 2021. But the journalism that's been done on who he had business dealings with, that he had been investigated before, that his neighbors had reported him, that he actually had communications with different journalists, and he had essentially lost his temper and started to say all these different things to these journalists, very sexist, very xenophobic, very racist things. Like, I feel like I've learned so much more about him because of the journalism that's been done in Colombia after his arrest.
So, I mean, he got arrested because people had spoken, victims had spoken out. Because if your raid went nice and the girl's just sitting there, then he's not in flagrante again. I mean, it could have been a... Did you just say he had been living in Colombia for 21 years or something?
No, I think I misspoke. He's living there since 2021.
Oh, 20. No, you didn't. I think we should just clear up quickly the drug Tusi, maybe not known to all of my listeners. It's a synthetic drug. It's like a party drug, right? I mean, I don't know. I have no knowledge of these things, but I know it's not widely available, and I guess it completely zonks you out. So again, you are at risk from abuse. Is it a pink color? Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think they call it pink cocaine. I think is what they call it, and it's highly addictive as well, which is a technique. I think that a lot of, because when people ask me like about human trafficking in Colombia, they're like, well, do you have to break them out of closets, or are they held captive, or anything like that? And that's not the case. Like, they're not held captive. They are by addiction. Because what these Americans will do is that they have the resources to buy this Tusi, to buy this cocaine. They'll give it to these victims, get them addicted, and then there's no need to chain them up, or there's no need to keep them captive, because if they're addicted to Tusi, and these Americans or these foreigners or these Colombian traffickers, whoever, are their dealers, then they are enslaved. They are captive, and they always come back because they've got them addicted to these drugs.
I mean, it's just awful, isn't it? The issue that I'd like to move on this one, though, is sort of the reaction. It's good to see people in Medellin out protesting. It's good to see feminist groups out there in Lleras protesting and people making a show of this, because it hits the headlines. We become more aware. We are now demanding answers and reactions from our politicians and law enforcement, of course. We feel like Federico Fico Gutierrez is the mayor of Medellin, that his measures are kind of reactionary. I mean, obviously, he's coming out a few days later and speaking and so on. But they do feel like partial measures at the moment. We're going to suspend prostitution in Lleras, Parque Lleras. And these are businesses are built around the nightlife industry, which of course includes prostitution. We're suspending that. It's like, well, that just displaces it. It just puts it, does it go from Lleras to Provenza? And does it go from Provenza to wherever else? And then obviously, it's hard for any politician to say, right, we're going to work on the root causes of this problem. And in the podcast with Maria Jimena Dusan and some experts, they've said, well, this measure, of course, is very classist as well, because we're just dealing with Lleras and with Parque Lleras, you're just going to displace it elsewhere. Have you seen, I ramble on, but have you seen that the politicians are very involved in trying to discover, investigate, and resolve root problems? Of course, we have the massive migration of Venezuelan immigrants, Venezuelan exiles fleeing the situation there. We have obviously a huge underclass of displaced people in Colombia as well. We have incredible inequality that leads families sometimes to exploit their children and put them out there. Have you seen work being done to hopefully put you out of business, so that there's no more victims, no more need for you to do this? I mean, have you seen any of this?
I'll put with a couple of periods after, I think. Politicians are interesting. Like, they have so much power, but you also wonder, like, is it all bark and no bite? Is it just to get them to like the next level of wherever they're trying to get to? And you know, it happened. The transfer happens so often with these politicians. It's tough for us to invest the time and getting to know them really well, and then to have them leave, and then to get to know new people. Like it's such an interesting process. But I will say, FICO has at least been vocal about it. I think he recognized the situation in Medellin. He's talked with a number of our journalist friends. He was part of that documentary. I think you hit the nail spot on where I think it's good that he closed the park, but also knowing that it will just displace it unless you invest in like prevention and victim services, giving law enforcement the teeth to actually go after these people. What that will do is just, like you said, move it to a different sector, or it will just push it further into the Airbnbs that are allowing it to happen anyway. With the higher ups in the Al Qaeda, we haven't had a lot of communication with anyone from Bogota or any of that. We're very much focused on the city of Medellin. We hope to meet with them in the coming months. We hope to collaborate with them more than anything, just so that they have input on the input of our survivors. Like Libertas has 88 as of yesterday survivors of human trafficking in our program in the city of Medellin. And 83% of them have been abused by some kind of foreign citizen. And so their voices are incredibly important to where, look, this is what happened to me. They gave me a false document. So this is the person who gave me this false documents. This is the hotel or the Airbnb I was taken. This is what I would change if I was in your situation. Like, their voices are so important because they have that live carnal experience. And like, if it's just people like the alcalde or these nonprofits, or even like someone like me, like I'm very aware that I am an American male who visits Colombia but lives in Wyoming. So my voice is not near as important as the survivors who have survived these cases that live in Colombia, that live in Medellin. And so our invitation to the alcalde, if they're listening or if they want to listen to the future with us, is give us the space to bring 25 of our survivors, ages 14 to 29, and let them tell you what they would like to see in your city to make it better, so that girls like them can give a voice to girls that are going through this right now, and to hopefully prevent other girls from going through what they had to go through due to a lack of oversight by these different politicians.
You mentioned that the people are giving the fake documentation. It's just total organized crime. I mean, this is, and I would say probably, is it the Tren de Aragua and the Clan del Golfo? These are the ones we're looking at who organize this?
Yeah, I think there's they're part of it. I think there's armed groups that are also part of it that are, La Terraza, I think, is one of them.
La Terraza, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, they're operating in Medellin that give these false documents. I even think there's some members of even like small factions of like the FARC or the ELN. We've had a number of survivors that have reported that there were members of like armed groups at some of these gringo parties. And so what it really is, it's an organized effort. It's anywhere between, the Americans that are visiting, the people that are making the false documents, the Colombian pimps, that can sometimes, like you said, even be family members, and then Airbnbs that potentially look the other way to let this abuse happen. It is a total organized effort to facilitate the abuse of these kids.
I know you have a lot of things to do. I think, we must say that it's not just Medellin. Cartagena is probably the actual epicenter for Colombia, port city that, caters not just to foreigners, also Colombians in this market and so on. And, there was that reasonably poor movie, Sound of Freedom, that dealt with that. We do have to mention it. But of course, you see it. You see the prostitution and the child prostitution right there. The Plaza de los Coches, elsewhere, you're right there in the street. Bogota, of course, capital city, trappings. But I think Cartagena and Medellin, climate-wise, easier to get Airbnbs in areas. It's just sort of, I would say, probably more attractive in that situation. But I had, I've been talking to friends from Medellin and some who live here in Bogota, and this is my final kind of ask of you: they're in their upper 30s, early 40s. upper 30s. And they say, you know, when we were 18 and 17 and going to Parque Lleras to party, this wasn't there. And I was like, well, you know, the prostitution was there. The prostitution was there because of the nightlife. I'd like to know about, has it grown exponentially, this? Because my friends from Medellin say they really feel that post-pandemic, it has grown exponentially. It's sort of this sexual tourism for underage victims, minors. What would you say about this? Have we seen a massive increase post?
Yeah, that's a great question. And you're totally right. You're spot on. It's not just Medellin. Like I harp on Medellin quite a lot just because that's where so many members of our family are from. But it happens in Bogota. Like we had a case that came in just a couple of days ago of an American man renting an Airbnb with a 14-year-old victim in Bogota. Cartagena, there's so many nonprofits doing amazing work up there in Cartagena because of it being the epicenter, not just Americans, but Israelis, of Indians, of Canadians, of Mexicans, of Puerto Ricans, of just everybody that goes to Cartagena because it's Cartagena. One of the survivors in our family that I admire most is from Cartagena, and she lived 15 years of just nonstop abuse of members of all facets of society. And I think it's, you know, it's interesting because I don't know if it's grown or not, like post pandemic. You know, I've been working against Americans in Medellin since 2018 when I first got a call about a guy named Victor Galarza from New York.
Yeah.
And it's it does seem like there's definitely more cases coming our way. I don't know if because that's just the crime is more visible now or survivors feel safer reporting. I know a lot of people flocked to Colombia post-pandemic because it was one of the first countries to open up, fairly conservative country. So I think that the mask mandates were gone fairly quickly or they weren't enforced as strongly. And like, as you know, like you live there, like you know that Colombia has so many beautiful things to offer this world and the people that visit there. And I think when people go down there, the sinister ones found that Colombia, what it also has is a lot of vulnerable girls, vulnerable women that are able to be exploited. Mm. And even like some of these, I've had communications too of people that have gone to Medellin, not to find minors, but to party with women. And I'm like, I have to explain to them of like, no woman that I've ever met has grown up wanting to do this. Not one. And so you doing this is like there's something behind this story, whether it's a pimp, whether it's extreme poverty, whether it's a life of abuse, and you are part of the story of abuse because you think that it's okay to purchase women in this way. I see it as the world's oldest oppression versus oldest profession. And these people, like there's another question I get asked quite a bit, and I'll close with this. You know, people have asked if it's grown since the pandemic, and they asked, like, what do these people think? How do they get to this point? And I just don't know. I think this is shortly after we spoke in October and right before the arrest of this MMA fighter. There's a very wonderful survivor in our family who's actually featured in our documentary, Engañadas. And I was on my way to church, had my tie on, I was getting ready to go, you know, go to church, go worship, whatever. And this survivor's mother called me because this MMA fighter had published the abuse on Pornhub. It had gone viral, had something like 50,000 views in the first hour, and the girl had just taken 12 melatonin in an attempt to take her own life. And so I was on the phone with her, you know, I was in Wyoming, I was on the phone with her while she threw up these pills, telling her that, you know, her life's not over, that please don't do this, we're gonna get this guy, we're gonna get you some help. And this guy just had zero regard of the consequences to her on him publishing these videos. And so I don't know if it's grown. I don't know what they're thinking. And I know that for like Timothy Livingston, who's kind of like the villain of the hour, there's 25 open cases still that we have that our girls have reported, American men that have abused them that we're still going after. And so I hope that like once the Timothy Allen is in handcuffs or he's in jail or he's out of the news, that people still focus on that. There's still 25 more cases of men that abuse these kids and to seek justice. And I know, I think there's a long rant on your ultimate question, but I don't know if it's grown. I don't know what these guys are thinking. I just know that it's there and that we have a duty to the Colombian people, to the Colombian girls, to protect them, to help them, and to do everything we can to shine a light on this and to make sure these men are held accountable for what they've done.
I think that's an appropriate moment to bring this to a close. I thank you for your time and sincerity sharing this, because it's not an easy topic to talk about. It's not an easy topic to listen to, but it's something that needs to be out in the open so that we can continue to work against it, to stop for these horrible people from coming out, going anywhere. I mean, doing anything, really. Obviously, this conversation is based on those who come down here to look for minors. I mean, that's the deal. This is what your foundation works on, is getting the survivors out, creating the survivors, and helping them reconstruct their lives post trauma, which obviously is an incredibly long-term situation. I could like to direct listeners to Emily Hart's Substack, and of course we've got it on our Patreon as well. She interviews the union of sex workers in Medellin, because sex work between consenting adults within, you know, stand wherever you stand on it, sex work between consenting adults of age is a different situation altogether. It's a different situation altogether. And so Emily has had interviews with them, and the text and the content has been translated into English. It is in Spanish. Emily did an incredibly good job and had some amazing people discussing the situation. We are talking about the issue of minors here. Tyler, thank you so much for your time. Let's direct people to Libertas International. I'm happy that people have been looking at the website, maybe some donors and stuff. You are doing important work, very important work. Thank you again for your time.
No, thank you, Richard. I appreciate, obviously, the space to talk about, you know, a place that we love so much. I just encourage people that one thing that was really refreshing about your podcast that we did a couple months ago is it exposed me to a lot of really good expats that live in Colombia that have recognized a problem, that want to be part of the solution, that want to protect the Colombian people that have accepted them as part of their home. And that was just something that was so refreshing and beautiful to me. And so if people are listening, they want to get involved, they want to support LibertasInternational.org. It helps support these 102, 103 survivors that we have, helps facilitate these operations with the police. And I'm just always thankful to the space to, more than anything, just elevate their voices, because I love sharing about their bravery, about their resilience, and they're the Colombia should be so very proud of their little girls, because they are very special, very brave, and I'm very proud to be considered someone that's supporting them.
Well, thank you again. We will sign off now, this episode 515. Please stay on the line and listen to some advertising from our sponsors. This has been a telling episode, pretty hard as well, but again, important news following on from last week's episode 514, talking about hotels and so on and what goes on there. We'll be back next week. I've got some other people lined up, but thank you again for listening, and bye-bye. The Colombia Calling podcast is sponsored by Latin News, a leading source of political and economic analysis on Latin America and the Caribbean since 1967. Their flagship publication, the Latin American Weekly Report, provides a behind-the-scenes briefing on all the week's key developments throughout the region. Sign up for a 14-day free trial at latinnews.com. We are also sponsored by BNB Colombia Tours, which is a leading tour operator providing a wonderful range of exclusive small group shared tours for those over 50, along with customizable private tours to both popular and off-the-map destinations throughout this beautiful and diverse country. If you're interested in experiencing one of their unforgettable journeys through Colombia, be it a shared tour with like-minded travelers or creating a unique private package of your own, just complete the form on the Columbia Calling website. That's www.columbiacalling.co, or the BNB Columbia Tours website. That's www.bnbcolumbia.com. And they'll be in touch within 24 hours to answer all of your questions and to start the planning of your exclusive Colombian adventure. So that's bnbcolumbia.com and latinnews.com. Thank you for supporting our sponsors.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.